Welcome to No Hype, the podcast about truth, science, and the future of marketing. Brought to you by your hosts, Allison Dietz
and Sam Shapiro Klein.
Welcome to the latest episode of No Hype. With me today on the TransUnion side, I have my colleague Sam Shapiro Klein, who leads product marketing for our True Audience Identity Solutions. Sam, it's great to have you on No Hype.
Hi, Allison. Glad to be on No Hype.
And our No Hype guest today is Ajay Kapoor. Ajay is a serial entrepreneur and award-winning executive focused on driving transformation from all types of organizations, from startups to scaled enterprises. Currently, Ajay is an executive at General Motors, where he leads global performance-driven marketing, reporting to the CMO. In his role at GM, he is privileged to build out their modern marketing machine, which includes developing digital products, demand gen, marketing analytics and insights, MarTech strategy, data and operations, and privacy and consent strategy. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So when we went through this description of your role at GM, you know, I wanted to dig in a little bit into this idea of the modern marketing machine, because I thought that was a really great way to describe what marketers are trying to accomplish today in terms of building out their ad tech, you know, their data ecosystem to support modern marketing. So can you expand on what that machine really is and what it does for GM in particular?
Yeah, happy to. Really appreciate being on this. As we think about our marketing stack, we have to service, you know, four major brands: Buick, GMC, Cadillac, Chevrolet. But then we have all these other brands, from OnStar to our parts, our accessories, our digital subscriptions and capabilities, let alone our B2B offering to fleet and others. So as I think about the modern marketing stack, I have individuals in these brands focused on the brands. But for my team, being that linchpin that cuts across, it was really important to build the capabilities that bring technology, data, and insight and analytics to the forefront. So we think about modern marketing, it's about being as precise, prescriptive, prescriptive as possible, using the best technologies and capabilities with privacy and consent at the forefront to find and speak to the right individuals effectively. And so what we do on the performance-driven marketing side at General Motors is cover that chasm. And that's from marketing intelligence, advanced analytics, the insights and the models necessary there, to the marketing tech stack that needs to ingest that, take those coefficients, be able to operate off of it, to the scaled operations for a company the size of GM with privacy, consent, and the data that's required to underpin this. Those things are very difficult and disparate in many other organizations. It was really important for us to bring those things together and get the synergies of a flywheel that allows our marketers not to think too deeply about how do I get data XYZ to activate in a particular way, but to think about really unique ways of addressing market need, consumer need, and being able to provide the messaging, the creative, and the activations that we're looking for from a marketing standpoint for our key brands.
So it's interesting you're talking a little bit about the linchpin. I like this idea of being the linchpin that sort of spans across the chasm. And one of the things that kind of reminds me of is being almost like a Rosetta Stone, right? Like all these different groups across GM have different languages or different needs that they speak. And what you're trying to build is some sort of, you know, consistency in the way that you kind of go to market. Would you agree with that? Like, what are your thoughts on that analogy of a Rosetta Stone?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've not thought about it that way. I would say there's consistency, but then there's flexibility, right? So it's all about hard points, soft points, agility to meet the market. And our customers are ever expanding, ever developing, ever changing. And our ability to bring tools, capabilities that allow for that scale, to your point, but then be able to be customized in a really effective manner towards the marketing challenges or opportunities that we're seeing is really critical. So different brands are in different places. Different segments are in different places. Pickup is quite different than, say, entry-level SUV, let alone how we think about safety and security with OnStar and many of the other products and services. So yeah, I like that Rosetta Stone analogy. I may have to steal that as I like go around and talk about our group more effectively.
That's awesome. That's good. I really like the idea of adding in flexibility, because I think what you're describing is there, those needs continue to evolve. And we're going to unpack that a little bit more in terms of how needs are evolving in our discussion today. But I think it's a good sort of setup for, you know, talking through some of those changes.
Yeah, the marketing ecosystem, right, has evolved so much in the past couple of decades. And I think we have seen this a lot through the largest marketing organizations, especially that want to apply more data science. They want to apply greater data capabilities. And even today, right, we're starting to get into a world of AI and being able to apply that in more facets of our business. But, you know, at the same time, the way that marketers engage with consumers in environments that they don't control in particular, right, has been upended a lot through data deprecation. And so I'd be interested in hearing about, you know, as GM thinks about engaging the consumer, you know, what does addressability and addressable marketing really mean to you and to General Motors?
I think we as marketers, as the marketing industry, haven't done a great job marketing ourselves. There is way more science than art to the work that we do on a consistent basis. The math and science that goes behind how we think about audiences, how do we address those audiences, how we think about breakthrough creative that's distinctive and builds the right memory structure, is more art than science. And we have opportunities as an industry and as a group to tell those stories. It's probably the thing that I say the most to my finance and, you know, cross-functional counterparts around the challenges, to your point, Sam, around how we do our work in a privacy and consent safe manner across the ecosystem. So you are right. We're seeing kind of signal deprecation from, call it the Wild Wild West of the early 2010s, right? And so maybe we're coming back to more of a normative state of where we were, call it pre-digital revolution. And so I think we as marketers now need to take what was tried and true and critical and important, our econometric modeling, and our ability to start getting clear understanding, impact, and coefficients against that, to the highly skilled components of what digital marketing unlocked within the industry. And so I think we're seeing that evolution. This is the year, right? Cookie deprecates likely by the end of this year. We're going to have to build systems, processes, and procedures that we've now become accustomed to, you know, through the analytics, the clear ROIs, et cetera, that we've had over the last, say, decade in a new manner. And I'm really excited about that, because I do think putting at the forefront customer trust within the overall ecosystem is so critical to how we do our work as marketers, and we do it effectively. And so, yes, we're looking at unleashing signal as effective as possible, if that's on the platform side, leveraging our first-party data effectively to understand what lookalikes look like, or other mechanism to look at where further growth could exist. And then obviously nurturing really strong relationships that we already have with our customer base. We're lucky as General Motors for being 100 plus years old, and in Buick's case, 125 years this year. And being able to be in so many households for generations, and building upon that, you know, belief system and product that we've been able to deliver over the last, you know, 100 plus years has been a benefit for us. So we're going to use the modern marketing capabilities. We're going to use the legacy and the history. We're going to use really strong brands to do the work that we need to do to continue to drive impact with the products, the portfolio, and the capabilities that we're bringing to our customers.
It's interesting hearing you say, you know, the Wild West of marketing. And it does feel like there has been a time period where, you know, regulation was slim and companies made choices about how they wanted to use data. And, you know, we've always been advocates for applying principles like privacy by design and respecting the right of consumers in how they want to engage with brands. There's an evolving shift towards, you know, nurturing the consumer relationship as opposed to engaging in the Wild West to provide effective and performative digital marketing. Do you feel like that is a shift that ties into how your marketing stack is evolving? More specifically, does the fact that General Motors is moving to this kind of organization where you sit across brands, how does that connect to the nurturing of the consumer relationship?
Yeah, I would say more marketers are looking at both acquisition metrics to drive growth, as well as what long-term value looks like. And it is a fundamental balancing act of, you know, making sure we're doing everything in our power to drive additional value to our customers and additional value to the corporation through nurturing, demonstration of new product capabilities. Now, as we're getting into software-defined vehicles, the ability to push new capabilities to the vehicles to, you know, solve for consumer wants and needs, as well as continuing to bring net new individuals that may not be in the GM portfolio today, right? So, or let alone in the broader marketing, you know, ecosystems portfolio. So, Sam, I think it's both. And then as we're entering this kind of, you know, 24 and onwards ecosystem, you're going to see brands get really smart about how they think about growth and acquisition, leveraging, you know, propensity models and targeting and as much science as possible, as well as saying, hey, we have this awesome group that has put, at least in our case, you know, pretty significant investment into a vehicle. How do we make that the best experience for them? And how do we continue to drive consumer experience that drives stickiness and the desirability to either purchase another or to look at an accessory or to do other things? I just came across a really interesting fun fact. 60% of people name their cars, right? So it becomes beyond just simply a vehicle, a tangible product. It becomes part of your family. And so I think we're just lucky and privileged to be able to work on a medallion category like automotive, and then to drive both the synergies of how you think about acquisition, as well as how you nurture strong customer experiences that then lead to stickiness across the portfolio.
I agree with you that there is this affinity and sort of favorability towards that category in particular, and you become sort of attached. And it's interesting to hear you think about how you use data across the GM organization to help think about what does that journey look like from a customer perspective over a longer period of time. You know, I spent a lot of time in the CPG world, and that customer journey is a lot shorter, right? You're going to the store every week to buy, you know, brand new products. And that's a very different experience when it comes to auto. So how do you think about building that longer term journey?
I think there's just a different focus that is required from safety and security and, you know, people putting trust of their children and family members and friends into the vehicles, let alone to, you know, what it offers and kind of the unleashing of different possibilities, if that's road trips, et cetera, that makes this category so interesting. So that's what's gravitated me to, you know, figuring out how we get to that modern marketing machine on General Motors and how we continue to drive what we think is industry best and leading. And how we use, you know, tools and technologies and data to help unleash that. There's just so much that's hitting a marketer today, from generative AI to how do I think about propensity targeting to how I think about speaking to my cross-functional counterparts to say, like, we're effective or we are moving the needle. Those are a lot of hats that every marketer has to carry on a day-to-day basis. It's a new challenge and it's exciting. But it takes quite a bit to build the capabilities to do that consistently across an organization, you know, regardless that's auto or CPG or elsewhere.
For sure.
Some of, you know, those challenges, those pressing moments of how you're nurturing the consumer or you are, you know, aligning to their needs in the way that they see themselves in their vehicle is, it's especially an interesting moment in the industry because of the adoption of electric vehicles. And so there's, I think, probably real moments of introspection within the brands that you're working with, as well as within General Motors, about where you are engaging with the consumer and how you're delivering the EV that is appropriate for them and the EV that has the right performance and the right kind of capability and fit. So in that context, how have GM's first-party data assets and consumer relationships, you know, played a role in improving customer engagement into the EV era?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I was at CES last year, year prior, and what I shared on stage is we're gonna see more change in the automotive industry over the next 3 to 5 years than we have call over the last 100. Right. So if that's from infrastructure, think about all the gas stations that are clearly available, to what that has to translate into a charging infrastructure, to the vehicles, to the supply chains associated with it. It's a moment where this massive industry is going through a pivot. I would just say, like, for us, it's around providing offerings and choices that resonate with our customers. And what we've looked at from the data sets that we're able to assess, right? So these are public understanding of where charging sits or where customer sentiment is around EV, et cetera. We've created, in essence, what we call our EV maturity model. And we look at kind of the concentric circles of where maturity can occur and will occur in the United States. So if you think about currently, EV penetration's the highest on the West Coast and the East Coast. For us, you know, number one automaker in the United States, we sell vehicles all across the country. And so it's about providing clear understanding of what that looks like, as well as the communication, education around what these vehicles can offer, right? And then providing our customers the choice or potential customers the choice around what's the right vehicle for them. And so, Sam, we're using first-party data, we're using industry-wide data, and then more importantly, we're pulling these data sets together to do analysis to understand where to play. So where should we focus? And then how to win? What are the barriers of entry within those places? I think about it as new category creation. I realize, like, long-term, it probably won't be. But if you think about it from that mindset of it's a bit of a new category creation, a clear understanding of what the barriers of entry, what the customer barriers are, understanding where are there places where you're at either at a maturity scale of, you know, 0 or 1 versus, you know, 9 or 10 becomes really critical as we think about our investments within marketing and our focus on the types of messaging and creative that's required there, let alone the audiences that would be the most receptive to looking at EVs as their potential next purchase.
You know, we look a lot, you know, without giving too much of the secret sauce away, we look a lot at understanding what kind of consumer characteristics are really going to be predictive for suitability of a product. And, you know, as TransUnion, we're thinking about this in CPG, we're thinking about this in retail, we're thinking about it in financial services or in automotive, and finding things like, you know, there may be strong preferences for people within certain income bands. And it doesn't mean high or low, maybe it's medium. Right. And I think in the EV market in particular, there are a lot of preconceptions. If you are not working for General Motors every day, you might be thinking that there's a certain model of an early adopter for an EV, and pickup trucks might be a surprise, right? But General Motors is innovating in that segment. And I would be interested in hearing, you know, as you're applying your first party data and you're working through what you can understand about consumers, have there been surprises? Like, do you have a different view of what a really good EV or sort of maybe mature EV potential buyer looks like as opposed to what you might have thought 2 years ago?
Yeah, Sam, look, I think when we initially started down this focus of building what we're calling our EV maturity model, my assumption, I'll just go on the record, was like, oh, it's just like, it's early adopters, right? Tech enabled. They likely buy the best TV. They're the ones with the best headphones. You know, they want the next, call it the equivalent, shiny, technologically forward vehicle. And the realization is, like, there's a lot of folks that are willing and exploring EV adoption across the US. What we're able to start doing through our modeling work is start to figure out where that signal exists. Where are those cohorts that exist? And what's really interesting is you start to see kind of an older demographic that's really interested, right? They're just short commuting around town, right? That becomes a really interesting. You see folks that are looking at performance in a different way, and their experiences that an EV can provide on that front. They're side note, super fun to drive, right? And so, yeah, I think there's the obvious spots where, again, you see kind of a hotbed in San Francisco and other tech-enabled and tech-focused areas. But then you're like, oh, there's really interesting category growth and development and creation that's available in all these disparate areas. And those could be groupings by like age, demographic, et cetera. But it could also be attitudinal or behavioral that you start to see, hey, that's really cool. Those folks may be higher intention on EV for their potential next purchase. And again, what I would just say is like, you know, we have a decent amount of like history of sales. Most of them were on internal combustion, right? So EV is really interesting because as we mine our first party data, there's not a lot of EV signal in there in magnitude, right? Like as a relative, we do have to use other signals that are publicly available to say what sentiment look like, what are behaviors, who's attaching to what, and starting to kind of discern where do we think that next opportunity is. And then the last thing, Sam, it's a test and learn mindset. It's about like rapid iteration and looking at kind of the flexibility that we're seeing as a response rate within the market. And so I think it's the balancing of like, I think I know through really smart modeling to I got a test, I have a hypothesis, let's go prove it out. Let's be really smart about how we design that hypothesis. And let's figure out a really clear understanding of what we think success criteria looks like to say yes, no. If yes, okay, let's keep expanding. Let's keep doing this. So I think it's the balancing act of all of that that becomes, you know, the genesis of how we think about EV adoption or EV maturity within a pretty robust, you know, internal combustion portfolio. And for us, it's about providing options and choices to our customers in the most effective way.
So Ajay, you answered a question that I was brewing in my mind when we started talking about sort of first party data strategy and sort of where things are going from a data ecosystem standpoint. You talked about this culmination between sort of, you know, the 2010s and all of the data that we had available to us. And my mind immediately goes to, you know, psychographics, you know, signals in the industry that you could potentially get very narrow in your targeting. And then you started talking about sort of the legacy behavior. And my mind there, having spent a lot of time at Nielsen, goes to age, gender targeting. And what you're kind of describing is a culmination of the two, of like bringing the two together. So my first question around that is, what sources and where are you going for sort of that support to be able to pull the two together? Because it's a very different approach than A or B. You're sort of saying, you know, it's C and it's a combination of the two. Is that, am I hearing you right? Is that how you feel about it?
Yeah, you're spot on. I think us as marketers and as an industry are now having to be pulling together these multitude of data sets, you know, as much quantitative data, but in some cases, all as well as the big and thick qualitative data to help inform what we're trying to do. And so, yeah, those sources are, there's, call it Nielsen for automotive, right? That exists. It's S&P Poke, yeah. Right? There's yeah. All these data sources. There's a massive omnibuses that, you know, Harris Poll and others are doing, you know, Morning Consult. Some really interesting, rich, qualitative and quantitative, mostly quantitative data that exists out there. And then it's the fun of like, how do I get these tables to match? And how do I
channel?
Exactly. And how do I stitch it? And, you know, part of that is, again, the art around the like science of what marketing is. And again, I'll be vocal about it. I think we as marketers do some really hard math and do some really hard analysis that, again, for the folks that are, that's their job, not picking on my finance folks, love them. But like their ledgers are pretty clean, right? And so we're now trying to combine different pieces of data effectively to start to find signal amongst the noise, you know, that exists. And it's a lot of heavy lifting, but it's pretty amazing. And then you start to tie that into things like econometric modeling or test and learn or other things to say, all right, I can validate the hypotheses and what's coming out of this data pretty rapidly. And I think that's where we as marketers are also trying to like continue to build. It's like, owning business outcomes really effectively, tying our activities to that, but also figuring out fast twitch early detection signals to say, is this working or not? So we can make the right investments at the scale of many of the CPGs, auto, and others that are helping to drive the marketing at scale that occurs across the United States and the world.
It's the complexity.
Yeah, it sounds very complicated and hard, right? You're making it sound very hard, which is true. It is hard with media fragmentation and data fragmentation, and that it's all becoming more challenging. What are some of the things that you have put in place that you would, or maybe if you could speak to even just one thing that you would say is your go-to easy button? Like what are the tools that you would say have made things easier for you?
Yeah, I don't know if there's an easy button on this, right? So we talked about ad nauseum fixing our data foundation, right? Like we're only as good as the cleanliness, thoroughness, taxonomy, stewardship, governance that's required around our core data. Okay, great. Then it's, you know, really strong econometrics, MMM models, alongside, you know, pressure testing of experimentation at scale, really, really critical. Okay. So those things as an entity. And then we haven't really got into like, and you touched upon it, Allison, it was really around activation. It's then figuring out how do you actually go activate against that. And for us, having that housed in a real-time CDP, low code, no code, then enables our marketers to build audiences with creative really effectively, quickly, is really critical. So I would say those things from a stack standpoint, I think for a marketer at scale, is non-negotiables. And then it's building the infrastructure, the mindset, the learning culture around that, that forces, you know, rapid and constant iteration. Still having, you know, in many cases, our purchase cycles are much longer than, say, CPG. Having that patience to see that play through, but being able to get enough tests out there to pressure test your econometrics, pressure test what you can see from the data that's available, and then being able to activate effectively against that. And that could be, you know, first party, clean room, et cetera, or that could be platform specific, right? And using those signals in the most effective way possible. So that's the balancing act. And then, you know, I would say the measurement side's always going to be the most challenging of like, how do you actually stitch this all together to say it worked or didn't work? And so we spent a lot of time thinking about what are fast twitch KPIs that help us understand, are you in the initial consideration set, you know, kind of call it historical brand health, stuff that's a little faster, as well as like in market, are you winning or losing on folks that are, you know, 30 days out on purchase? So getting really specific on those bell ends, having the systems and processes and the tools to do that at scale. And then, you know, to the point we talked about, having the flexibility to say like what we built today may not be the right thing for tomorrow, being able to continuously iterate against that, both from an infrastructure standpoint as well as an approach standpoint, is really critical.
Some of what you touched on really emphasizes sort of the why of the modern marketing machine, right? That if you want to work with data partners who it can be challenging to connect with, right? You know, you need to have some kind of ID or identity, form of identity to connect on. That's not easy. And it shows why you have a horizontal organization that sits across brands that can build the expertise and the infrastructure in order to connect different data sources together. And then, as you're saying, of modernizing that infrastructure too. What we see a lot of is we've been talking about more brands about using CDPs, but even moving into cloud and cloud data warehouses and the ability to access data, right? Having a large organization be able to use data the way that they want to and in the appropriate way is challenging. And to be able to do that with the speed that modern marketing requires, regardless of the purchase cycle, right, is tough. So with that in mind, you know, have there been specific choices GM has made around building that data infrastructure that you think has led to your ability to take action more quickly and get into market?
It's the focus on that data infrastructure. I wouldn't say there's anything specific outside of, you know, doing our best to build an ID spine within the house of GM, housing our data and infrastructure in, you know, kind of modern cloud enabled ecosystems, building, you know, bronze, silver, gold layers and the curation that's required. There's a lot of specific actions that become like standard operating practice and hygiene that's so critical to that, like, call it core foundation. I'll say, just kind of fast forwarding, what makes me a little excited about what I'm now seeing on the innovation front, and side note, spend a lot of time with venture capital, do investments through a handful of VCs that I'm involved in, as well as personal, is what low code, no code, you know, AI models can now do on the data side is fascinating. And so the challenge with a lot of these data problems, and I'll go back to my CPG days from like a decade ago, is once upon a time, we said, throw everything in an unstructured Hadoop, right? And we then realized, oh man, that's actually really difficult to actually use, curate, and access. So these data projects have been always like off schedule, red, costly, et cetera. And so I would just say, maybe coming back to your question, Sam, we've been really specific around how do you time box nugget-sized data projects. Does that make sense? And like maybe call them building blocks. We have a vision of what the house needs to be, but instead of trying to build a house like all at once, we're building it systematically block by block against like core, very accretive need states, use cases, if we could call them, and activating off of that, right? And so that's not only winning us credibility in the organization, it's allowing us to drive fiscal stewardship. It's also then enabling us to drive a positive flywheel, because those things are creating value, which allow us to go after the next, you know, rung of value creation. It's a long way of doing it, but it gets us and avoids us from interacting with probably what many of us as marketers or, you know, digital leaders have run into over the last decade, data projects that never ended, never got to where they needed to be. And there was always another, you know, sprint or sprints that were required to, you know, extract value. And so we've been really thoughtful and specific around that from a marketing standpoint to make sure that we're really tidy around what we actually focus on. Not all data is good data, just to be really blunt about it, and becoming really focused against what are the attributes we really care about, and then starting to think through how do you augment them versus trying to do everything at once.
It's a good analogy too, that GM is a big house, right? That the house is very large. And so there's a lot of rooms, there's a lot of rooms of data, making it a little bit easier to get between rooms, having a more interoperable data environment that has the right doors and it has the right, you know, electrical infrastructure between those rooms to keep them connected, is, you know, a way to move towards the entirely refreshed future while doing it one piece at a time rather than reconstructing the whole thing and hoping that it works out in the right time frame.
So, Ajay, obviously, GM is doing a lot of work to build an incredible house, and it sounds like the house is made of brick and not sticks, right? So when it comes to, not to make Google sound like the big bad wolf here, but when you start to talk about, you know, Google and all the things they're doing around data deprecation and the cookie, and they're finally starting to deprecate the cookie this year, we're seeing that happen. How do you think that impacts GM's marketing machine? And in particular, you know, if I would sort of slant that around, you know, what are you actually afraid of? Because you are building this incredible foundation. So what scares you as it relates to the cookie deprecation?
Yeah, no, I love that question. I would say I'd probably reframe it. And I'd say this. I think necessity breeds innovation. I think you either evolve or die, kind of a Darwinian mindset. And I think these evolutions are necessary for us as marketers. There's an easy button to use your reference, yet that easy button had implications to us as customers, as us as families, as us as humans, right? So, you know, I think about that deeply and I go, okay, this is cool. Now what do we do, right? And so I think the collaboration that we have with Google directly, with the industry, with the work that we do, you know, from IB, ANA onwards, is going to help set and reset what marketers do as a whole, from both signal capture, analytics, and then associated targeting or retargeting off of that. I'm confident that Google is going to have similar, maybe not as specific replacements for what we've historically done that are consent and privacy safe. We've obviously went through multiple years of like looking at this problem set from Flock and onwards. So I look at this as more of an opportunity for us to, you know, get out of the Wild Wild West, to go back to that and really focus on how do we do things that are accretive to our customers or potential customers in an effective manner, leveraging, you know, cohort signals, leveraging other means that are consent and privacy safe and effective versus what we've historically done. And I think that's where we as marketers are going to continue to grow our capabilities, our tool stack, our analytics, et cetera. So this is a moment where we may not know all the answers, but we have a huge opportunity in creating what that new reality needs to look like.
That new reality is something that has become more in and out of focus in some ways, I think. You know, the privacy sandbox from Google has been top of mind for multiple years now, and there's been some level of hope that it's going to be everything that could be dreamed of, and it's incredibly privacy first. And in many ways, they have built really cool infrastructure, right? They've built really good applications. I don't mean that to be denigrating it at all, because privacy tech is hard and they are working really hard at it. And there are applications that are going to have value. But I think as we've seen recently with the work the IAB Tech Lab put out, the ecosystem is challenging to recreate, especially when you're talking about doing something like moving an ad auction into the browser. The marketing ecosystem has built really strong tech for doing enormous scale, really fast, and with a lot of data for prediction. And so being able to move that into a new environment is not the easiest. I think before we wrap, I'd like to ask a question about a moment of success that you've had with GM. And specifically, what's something that you've achieved in the last year within the world of marketing and audience-based marketing and measurement that you think will be important for GM's success in this moment in time?
Yeah, just to come back again, I agree. There's open questions on how we do this at scale in the way that we've historically done rapid auction-based activation. And so it may be a little rocky, just be upfront, right, about what that may look like heading into 25 onwards. I'm maybe an optimist. I'm pretty certain we'll figure it out. If not, some large players is maybe a huge opportunity if you look at history for new startups, new innovation to start coming and breeding kind of the next evolution, the next chapter of the work that we have to do. Coming to your final question, look, I'm really proud of the work that we've been doing at GM, specifically as we think about, call it rapid twitch understanding of what's happening in our marketing space, how marketing ties to success metrics and outcomes to the business and tethering that through. And so there's a ton of new sophistication we've brought in from how we think about where we need to go play at the most highest level. We've spent a little time talking about EV maturity, but that is one of a few different tools and modules that we have, all the way down to like, how do you make sure that if a person's in market today, that we're doing everything in our best power to win that sale. There's a ton of new sophistication that we've been able to unlock from a framework, a growth framework standpoint, as well as the tools, capabilities, and analytics to underpin that to be adopted. Because candidly, an organization, any organization, any marketer wants to see success and make sure that if they're going to put their eggs in a basket in a way of working, a modern marketing, you know, machine behind them, that they're able to get the necessary proof points that they're accountable for. And we've been able to do that kind of in spades over this last year. And candidly, I feel like we're just at the starting point, especially as we think about the new innovations that wouldn't be needed across the marketing ecosystem as we deprecate the cookie and we think about activation in likely a different way heading into 25 onwards.
So if I can restate that, Ajay, it's a call to action for others to do something similar. But, you know, what you're kind of saying is, you know, start one room at a time and one building block at a time. You'll see the return on that investment in spades, but just be patient and know that it is going to take time.
You nailed it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This was a great conversation. I think I could have talked to you for another, you know, hour and a half. And I'm sure Sam feels the same way, but I appreciate you hopping on and chatting with us. And we're looking forward to, you know, a great partnership in the future as well. So thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And we'll let you go continue building the house.